Hi, welcome back. This is the Pleasure Project with Dr. Jen Kennedy. Today we're going to be talking about women's sexuality, and this is a broad topic that comes up so often in the clinical room. It's not just one thing, right? A lot of times women and their partners tend to want to reduce it down to the question of, well, are you attracted to me? Or what's your turn on? Or, you know, why are things different than they used to be? And it's complicated. It's a complicated picture. So that's what we're going to get into today, specifically talking about the main elements in my research and in my clinical practice that tend to influence women's sexuality. So the first one we're going to go into is body image. This is a big one. Women in our culture have so many messages from media, from family, from partners, from themselves about what their body is supposed to look like. This starts really young. I would say even before puberty, women get messages, girls get messages, and then eventually women get messages about what they are supposed to look like. And it's really hard to unhook from that. It's hard to delineate between what you want to believe or what you feel like full embracement and unconditional love of yourself and your body looks like versus all the little chatter and all the comparison that is so prevalent. And so body image really, really factors in. And I will also say that this changes through the life cycle, especially if someone's body starts looking different, maybe heading towards menopause. Obviously, the weight gain that tends to happen, things don't stay in the same place even after childbirth, that type of thing. Like, there's the body shifts as we age. Like, that's part of the natural aging process. And yet, women oftentimes don't give themselves permission to have that. So the body image can really, really get into their mind and make them very hesitant to participate in sex. They don't feel attractive. They don't feel desirable. Doesn't matter what their partner is saying. It doesn't matter if the partner says, I think your body is beautiful. I am into it. Or, you know, your bigger size turns me on. Or your bigger breasts, I like them, you know, which are a result sometimes of weight gain, that type of thing. Bigger, smaller, saggier, wrinkly, whatever, it doesn't matter. The body changes, and women's relationship to that change and the story that they're telling themselves about what that change means oftentimes factors into their sexual arousal and desire, because it's hard to have the body respond when the mind is screaming at you that you're not attractive. So let's not forget, body image is a big one. Number two is family and culture. So family messages about, you know, family of origin is how we often refer to it clinically. And then culture is sort of the larger piece, and culture can be community. It can be peer group. It can certainly be, you know, cultural identity of different types factor in terms of what is back to body. What is your body supposed to look like? How are you supposed to feel about your sexuality as a woman? Does your family culture or larger community culture, are there messages about women's sexuality? Are you allowed to have desire? Are you allowed to be flirty and playful? Are you allowed to have fantasies? Are you allowed to be a sexual being? You know, again, historically, men are seen to be more the aggressors. They're seen to be more the pursuers. And women oftentimes have been pigeonholed into more of a demure role. They're supposed to be desirable, but not desirous. And so we have to consider, how does family and how does culture tap into your sexuality? Like, what did your family of origin think about sex? Did you see affection between parents? Were you told to cover up? You know, what are the messages, largely implicit, that were told to you, and sometimes explicit too? But it's a really important conversation to consider. What is the soup that you were swimming in most of your life, and how does that influence how you show up intimately with a partner, with yourself. Do you have, you know, that soundtrack playing in the background? So number three is attachment. So attachment, many of you are probably familiar to some degree of attachment styles, or attachment strategies, as we call them clinically. And that is really determined typically on your caregivers and how you were raised in terms of your attachment style. And that can be anxious, that can be avoidant. There's another category of disorganized, but we'll stick to the main ones for this purpose. That is really a setup of how comfortable do you feel with proximity, how valuable is it to be close to another? It's interesting because we think, oh, of course you want to be, and when you're securely attached, which is the ideal profile, you can disclose, you can express need, you can have others express need, and you feel boundaried and you feel able to have those interactions and negotiate successfully. However, many of us are not securely attached, so we fit into the other categories. And that might look like anxious attachment, which tends to be a lot of fear, a lot of strategizing. That can also look like clinging kind of behavior or pursuit. Sometimes, you know, a lot of anxiety is produced by proximity. So there's this desire to be close, and yet there's also a lot of rumination, a lot of fear. And that can look like back to an earlier podcast we did about spectatoring, where you're really in your head and you're looking at your sexuality with a lot of judgment and criticism and questioning. You're wondering if your partner really feels what they say they do. And so if you think about that, of course, if there's that whole energy and chatter going on, it's going to be quite difficult for you to sink in and just be present and be really confident and relaxed and open to a sexual experience. Now, on the other side of that is avoidant. Avoidant tends to be like it sounds, where you're sort of keeping everyone at an arm's length. Now, avoidant people definitely still have a sex life, they can, but it can oftentimes look a little more detached. So they might be able to get off, they might be able to have gratifying sexual experiences, but sometimes the emotional piece is a little bit harder to access. And ultimately, we want that because it really does magnify and make the sexual exchange so much better. So sometimes we need to look at that picture and see and kind of assess for yourself, maybe do you tend to stay more on the side of avoidant or anxious, or are you, perhaps you're securely attached, which is gold standard. What I will say is if you're in relationship with a securely attached person, you can move closer to secure, which is awesome and helpful. Because consistently when you engage with them sexually and emotionally, they are there to appropriately respond and meet your needs. And there isn't a lot of confusion and game playing and that type of thing. So attachment can improve over time, which, you know, subsequently will positively affect your sex life. Number four for today's purposes is trauma. So trauma comes in lots of forms. There's big T and little T. The big T's are more like assault, really bigger things that have happened that would overtly affect your ability to have sex. It might be if you've had, say, even a surgery, if you've had cysts, or if you've had a lot of pain, like say, I've had a client who had to have surgery pretty young in her vagina, and it was kind of a constant refrain for her that something was wrong with her physically, and so she really kind of like latched onto that. Now, that is sort of a different kind of trauma than like the little T's. The little T's might be you're, you know, having a partner maybe that's insensitive that says, wow, your body looks different than my last partner's, or maybe makes comments or judgments that feel kind of like, oh, I'm undesirable or something's wrong with me or I'm not good enough. Traumas might also be little T traumas might be, I'm not the standard BMI, you know, body, your body index size isn't standard in the market. It might be, I don't know, there's a million little T's of just the day-to-day stuff where the takeaway is there's something wrong with me. Because if you feel like there's something wrong with you visually, functionally, you're likely to have reduced desire. And that's going to impact your, you know, your arousal. Your arousal is your body responding, desire is in your mind. And those are inextricably linked. Now, what I'll say also with the bigger T's, like childhood sexual abuse or survivors of assault, that type of thing, you know, body assault or sexual assault, it's hard to trust. It's hard to have close proximity and intimate proximity oftentimes after that type of incident. So it's going to be really important to do trauma work with a trauma-informed therapist. I love EMDR. I think it is magic and it can really, really help with those. It can help with a lot of these things, actually, limiting beliefs in general. So find a good EMDR practitioner. And also just a trauma-informed therapist, I think, is going to be really valuable to help you work on that stuff so that you can have more safety. If you're having pain, which is a bit of a kind of a sidestep, but related, then maybe see a pelvic floor specialist, see your gynecologist, like understand you shouldn't have pain with sex. I mean, yes, sometimes it's a little bit of discomfort if you're trying something new, but it really shouldn't be like true pain. So trauma, we don't want trauma to trump, you know, your sexual satisfaction and your sexual, you know, enjoyment. So let's address that first. The next one is age. So age is interesting. Throughout the life cycle, we get a lot of messages about who and how we're supposed to have sex. And age is one of those things, you know, as a younger person, we're in a very different body than when we're an older person, but also just priorities, partnering strategies. Young adults and teenagers are typically, their hormones are jumping and they're dating and they're looking and they're wanting lots and lots of contact. People through the life cycle typically kind of slow down. And so women, you know, are often more likely to be partnered in middle age and older age, and their body functioning changes. So specifically, like I mentioned before, with childbirth, That is a life stage piece that happens and changes the body. But so is just as you move into 30s, 40s, 50s, and career tends to really come into play. And our priorities are different. So we're not trying so hard to lock in a relationship. We're not trying to, we're interested in oftentimes more things, pursuits of intellect and less body related sometimes. So just looking at the life cycle and understanding also, have you ever had good sex? You know, maybe you're 40 or 50 or 60 and you're realizing that sex was something you did that was a little bit more performative, or it was an interaction that you had as part of a relationship, but you didn't really get a lot of the sex that you wanted. You don't even maybe know what that means, but part of this is like, okay, what have you had in the past? And do you feel like maybe you're at a stage in your life where you want something different? You want something better. You want something that maybe mirrors your solo sex experience a bit more. So I do find that age is a big factor. The other thing I want to just touch on menopause real quick, because the body does change. Sometimes lubrication's a little bit harder to achieve, like natural lubrication. So you're going to need to use some lube, and that's okay. Sometimes the skin also gets a bit thinner, And so micro tears can happen with fingernails, like say going in with penetrative sex, like manual digital penetrative sex. So you got to be careful, you know, and it's just understanding what's happening. And so you're making some modifications to make it a better experience. So that's a piece of it. There might also be sometimes women have a little bit more pain with older age. And so it's going to be important to have more arousal. It's going to be important to have the lube. It's going to be, you know, maybe sex needs to happen in a different way. I think that's just part of the conversation that needs to happen with partner if you're having partnered sex. So the last one I'm going to talk about today is more of a global one, but it's our relationship to pleasure. So this is a big one, and it sounds obvious, but it's one of those things that gets sort of missed. Is, in general, do you give yourself permission to have pleasure? It might be in a smaller way with like your favorite latte or staycations or that kind of thing, or it might be in bigger ways. Do you feel like you deserve time away? Not time that is productive. Sex for productive is pregnancy. Sex in general is not productive. It is pleasure. It is enjoyment. It is about dropping into an experience that feels amazing and rewarding and creative and powerful and just delightful. It can just be joy too. And so if you don't really value those things for real for yourself, then you're going to have a tough time in the bedroom because something will always get in the way. You will be tired, or you will feel like, I don't want to get dirty, or I had a big meal and I feel gross, or like a million other buts. So your relationship to pleasure, that is something that we cultivate in the Pleasure Project small group that I'm doing, is we start to really look at that. Like, what is your relationship to pleasure? And how might, if you were having good sex, how might that be more appealing to you? So I think it's really important to look at all these nuanced elements that factor in. And we certainly get into more of these in the Pleasure Project in more detail and try to understand what your specific profile looks like, because it's obviously different for everybody and it's different from day to day and over the lifespan. So anyway, I hope this has been helpful. You can head on over to pleasureproject.us if you'd like more information. I've got newsletters there. You can sign up for those. They're free. We've also got information on the small group happening. And I hope you have enjoyed this. And I look forward to seeing you or hearing you or interacting with you in some capacity in and around women's pleasure. So take care and thank you.